Welcome to the Powering Travel Podcast, brought to you by Expedia Group. I'm your host, Elizabeth Goodridge. Today, we are going to talk about food. When I travel, I want to eat well. I want to have authentic, memorable experience. And better yet, I want a story. One of my favorite travel memories happened in Hong Kong a couple years ago when I was at a soup dumpling place. And when I left, I was angry. I was angry because I was full. I had to stop eating, but the food and experience were so good, I wanted to keep going. Millions of other travelers feel the same way. These days, hotel restaurants, bars, and their chefs are driving booking decisions. Food's importance in travel is huge. Smart restaurants and hotels and destinations are banking on this trend. But how do you do it right? Well, that's tricky. And that's why we're talking to Chef Julian Haygood today. Julian has two restaurants in Seattle, Harry's Fine Foods and Harry's Beach House. And when you need a place to stay, he's got Harry's Guest House. Julian has learned that success comes from the details, leaning into what's local and unique. And for him, it's the influence of the Pacific Northwest. Let's actually talk to Julian to hear how he does this himself. And also, he'll talk about the challenges he's encountered along the way. You might learn a tip or two. At least that's what I hope. So let's go ahead and jump into the conversation. Julian Haygood, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning. My pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
So we have so many things to talk about. And we're going to talk so much about food and travel. But let's get a little bit about your background. First off, where did you get the inspiration to become a chef in the first place?
When I was 10, when we lived in Walnut Creek in the East Bay, San Francisco, I told both my parents that I wanted to be a chef.
At 10?
At 10. And okay. I asked for a fry daddy and a salad shooter for my birthday, both of which I was given.
I love this story.
Which is cute. And they're like, yeah, cute. I'm sure he wants to be a chef. Yeah, I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a doctor or whatever. I mean, it held true and here we are.
Here we are. Did they give you birthday presents, like culinary based?
Yeah, I would get knives every now and then as I progressed in my career. But
that's awesome. Yeah. And then you studied at the premier culinary institute.
Yep, in Hyde Park. And it was also when I was 10, I declared that I was going to go to the CIA.
Oh my God.
And they were, that's cute. I'm sure you will someday. But I graduated high school and off to the CIA. It was like Hogwarts for cooks. I mean, the campus is so beautiful.
Yeah, it is. I ate there. It's delicious.
Yeah, that old Jesuit monastery. And it's just like those crazy fresco. I mean, it's just food for days. Every 3 weeks, a class graduates and they do grand buffet. And there's torchons and foie gras and carving stations. I mean, it's like being at a medieval, like royalty buffet.
Like a feast.
But it's like your class meal when you're in the classrooms because it's wild. It's incredible.
All right. Your properties, which you have three. So you have Harry's Guest House, which is an upscale, you don't want to use the word B&B, but it's a glorious being at home, but with the luxury, right? Yep. And then two restaurants, Harry's Beach House and Harry's Fine Foods. But those are all in Seattle.
They are.
And we're recording this in Seattle.
Yep.
And I love this place, but I don't know Seattle very well. So tell me how you got from Walnut Creek to California. You decided to establish your life and your businesses in Seattle. What drew you here?
I moved to Seattle from New York, actually, after finishing culinary school and working in the Hudson Valley for a while. My brother was living here. I'd never really spent much time in Seattle.
Oh, okay. So it was new.
Yeah, it was new. But it was before the major kind of tech renaissance of Amazon and all that stuff. Mm. So it seemed relatively affordable at the time. And it's Capitol Hill was still, from a development perspective,
felt and that's where Fine Foods is. Your first restaurants.
Yep. And so I had met with a real estate broker and I'd been working as a bartender and a chef and kind of doing a little moonlighting here and there and met with a real estate broker and she's like, look at this abandoned bodega with the floor falling in and all this other stuff. And that became Harry's home.
You draw a lot of influence from the Pacific Northwest to your food and your restaurant.
Sure.
So what were the inspirations?
Growing up in California and knowing California, I mean, the growing season is so infinite. It's like you can have anything you want to anytime. But I think to cook more mindfully and seasonally in Seattle, it's a little bit harder and a little bit more of reach, but they're the bounty of like seafood here and makers from cheeses and like dairy products to all the shellfish farmers and everything. I mean, it's really an incredibly rich place.
I have so many questions because I feel like we could go so places. Yeah. We could go cheeses. We could go wine.
I know.
Could,
I know. When you say that, I'm like, wait, I'm like, I'm short circuiting. There's so many things.
So
like,
many things to
we
talk
buy
about.
With the restaurants. We buy a lot from the Puget Sound Food Hub and Farm Stand Local. It's basically a wholesale enterprise way to buy from farmers markets and small makers and purveyors instead of using FSA or like larger food service operation. Without having to physically, because I mean, as much as the fantasy of a chef is to go to the Santa Monica Farmers Market every Wednesday and shop for your restaurant, when you're doing something on a larger scale, but still want to be good stewards of the environment, have the freshest ingredients.
So here's my question. How do you take all of those wonderful influences in the food and the wine and put it on a plate or in a glass?
It's really a collaboration with all of the wonderful people that we work with. Restaurants are such intricate beings because they are so personality driven and opinion driven, both from the customer side and the staff side. It's passion. It's so passion. Much passion.
Yeah.
I didn't like this and I love this. And well, why? And what can we do better?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, same with staying somewhere too. So I think the collaboration with our chefs and with our general managers and with our beverage directors at this point, being able to really sit down at a table with everybody and talk and bring in ingredients and talk about menus and talk about seasons and talk about gooey ducks, for example, that you know what a gooey duck is.
And my cousin and I are fascinated by them. We are so excited. In fact, we were sending photos of gooey ducks back and forth before my trip. Okay, can you educate our audience?
Yeah. So a gooey duck are native clams to this region. They're usually a couple hundred feet offshore, but at low tide, you can go out and their siphons are sticking up out of the ground. But they go for $40-$50 a pound, I think, wholesale. They're incredible. They have a super rich clam flavor and they have an incredible amount of meat comes out of each clam because they're so big.
Yeah.
I think Taylor Shellfish in Seattle grows a ton of them and most of them is exported to China because China has such a big want for these. But anyways, boiled very quickly and sliced super thinly, they make an excellent crudo with like really good texture. It tastes like... But you're outside on that perfect like ocean day.
Yeah, and it smells good.
And you get the most perfect whiff of like salt air. That's when you have like a slice of like freshly blanched gooey duck. That's the essence of it. In our clam chowder at the beach house, we take gooey duck meat and it gets simmered and braised with cream and white wine and lemon and fennel. And then it's pureed. And so that's like the base for our chowder. So it's not just, I mean, a lot of chowders, I think, are heavy on cream. And half of this has the essence of clam, like all the way through.
Real clam.
Yeah.
Real clam. When I was at the beach house the other day, I did not get the clam chowder, but I did get the halibut.
Don't sleep on the clam chowder. How
was
that?
Well, no, I'm now thinking like Sam, my producer, and I now have to go back because first off, we were having a very hard time deciding what we wanted. And now we have to certainly go back and have the clam chowder. But walk me through it. Do you hear from your general manager or do you hear from your seafood purveyor and say, I've got some halibut that is so good. And then you all put me in the room to decide how you make a dish that represents the Pacific Northwest.
These are all like we're all on like text message together with the chefs from both restaurants. We'll get a text from our guys at Key City Fish and they'll be like, hey, got halibut coming in next week. Are you guys ready for it? And so a lot of the times we will go to the market and buy halibut just to start cooking and thinking about it. And we'll start a thread. Hey,
so you're prepping before it even
exactly
is in the restaurant. Okay.
So like the farro under the halibut,
which was delicious.
Great. Grown in Eastern Washington. So you have the springs. You have this gorgeous asparagus, which is locals in a few ways. You have an onion sous vide, which is on the bottom to give a little bit of creaminess, a little richness. And then the farro cooked from Bluebird Grains in Winthrop, Washington.
So again, super local.
Virtually everything, I think, minus the olive oil and the lemon on that plate is local. So we talk about it and then put it together. We do a tasting. We'll all sit down together and usually end up drinking wine at the same time.
Life is hard.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But then, and then someone will have, this needs more acid. This needs pickles. Okay. I wouldn't cook this in this way.
But it's a collaborative.
It's a collaboration. Exactly. That's really where the beauty, I mean, at the end of the day, I think, we have the final say, obviously, as to what we do, but it's not fun to do. It's so much more fun to work with people who are passionate about this.
I completely
and
agree.
And who excel at this and let them fly.
So do you think you're taking those lessons, you know, how collaboration is key to elevate your experience to your guest house? I mean, you're a chef and then you went into the hospitality. Tell me, were there some hard learning lessons? Were there some growing pains?
No, actually, it's funny. I think running a property is, or from a hospitality standpoint, like a guest house is actually easier than running a restaurant. you're still managing your guests' expectations and communicating.
Yeah, more touch points.
But there's more touch points. There are, but it's almost less at a certain point because I think it is so dialed at this point. It's okay, the pillows are not going to be overcooked. We've spent so many nights sleeping in there and messing with everything. You realize, oh, this light is too bright. It's in my, we should really angle this way, or the water pressure. Let's take out the pressure, the water pressure things in the shower head so you can have an enjoyable, luxurious shower. I think really turning over every glass and opening every cupboard and living in the space allows you to really, not everyone's going to, but I have to say, I think we only have 5 stars at this point on Google.
Oh, 5 stars.
Yeah.
5 stars.
Across the board.
So. Okay. But what I'm hearing you say is what it's number one, it's collaboration, but two, you are putting yourself in that actual spot of the guest, whether or not they're in the restaurant or whether or not they're booking that room. And you're doing that and trying that and practicing. So you're actually putting yourself there.
Absolutely. And I think the same when I'm working in the kitchens and working service, I will also, I'll order things for a table, even though it's not for that table. And I'll dash around the corner and eat it real quickly just to, or if the cooks are putting tips, I'll walk back on the line and taste things. I think as most good chefs do, I think you, if you're not tasting your food or sleeping on your pillows, then how do you know that they're good? And when you do that, I think your managers and your other folks see it. And I think it just becomes part of the culture.
Got it. So what hasn't worked? Anything?
We had to rent a couple parking spaces across the way because we're like, oh, we have this place on Capitol Hill. And we did take away the driveway and make a beautiful garden, which is makes sense.
And you're growing
which is,
food there, I bet.
There's a lot of herbaceous stuff out there, but it is largely ornamental. But it is between the restaurant and the guest house. And a lot of people do weddings and have photo shoots out there. It's really pretty. But we took away the parking. A lot of people were like, wait, I need a place to park the car. So that was a pretty easy solve.
But what I'm also hearing is details. You're not just focusing on what's happening inside in either of these properties, but you're also looking at the aesthetics on the outside. Did you hire someone to do the garden?
We did. We chose the palette of the plants we want. But Jake, my husband and I, we work together and are raising a 5-month-old together. So we have lots of...
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. So we have lots
of
jobs
together. Oh my God,
that's
so exciting.
We're good business partners.
Okay. But tell me about this collaboration because a lot of people in the travel industry are small B&B owners or they have a restaurant and it's a family business. So how did you guys decide to get into business together and what kind of lessons could other people learn?
Sure. I started both these restaurants on my own and I met Jake in 2020 and during kind of the end of the pandemic, I'd been running these restaurants for first one for almost 10 years. And I was kind of like, okay, I think I'm cool on this one. I was going to sell it to some folks who were working for me and Jake walked in there and was like, oh my God, this is such a beautiful space. You cannot sell this. Which like helped me see it through new eyes and helped breathe life into it. I am not a numbers person or a business person. I'm very much a creative person and a people person. There's not a face that I will forget walking through a door, which I think is a superpower. Names can be fuzzy, but...
Yeah, but recognizing faces,
always. So he quit his job at Apple and took a leap and now we're playing restaurant together. And it is, I have to say, there are days that are trying when we're with
each other
all day.
Of course.
And we have to remember when to be husbands, when to be parents, and when to be restaurateurs.
And do you take a step away? Do you say, okay, I'm going to focus on this? Or he lets you do the creative stuff and he does the
numbers. Very much so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So everyone should have like own lanes.
We have our,
So you're raising a child. You've got all these properties that must sometimes feel like children.
It does. We have, I think in the summertime at height, we have roughly 110 employees and people are like, oh my God, you have a child. Is it so hard? And I'm like, no, we already have 110 of them.
How do you find a good employee?
Again, back to the collaboration thing. We will be the first to interview if they're on a managerial scale, but I think really getting everyone's vote in from the team, because ultimately we're all working together. And it has some of our best folks have just been references from folks that we really enjoy working with now. So, I mean, I've just like everyone's tale as old as time, immediately post-COVID was a really tough market.
Of course.
From an employer standpoint. It's funny. It's like when you think about working in other places, there's as many people in the Bay Area as there are in the state of Washington.
Whoa, like, I did not know that.
You're like, oh, Seattle is this huge place. We joke oftentimes that it is just a small fishing village because it kind of...
Well, it has a place
It presents
map.
As a city,
yeah.
But it like... But there's not... There's, like I said, there's more people in the Bay Area than there is the entire state of Washington.
Yeah.
So and people, it's not massive. Yeah.
People know Seattle for these tech companies,
yeah.
But they know Seattle. And then once you get here, it's this cute, quaint fishing village.
It's beautiful. It's emerald. Like right now, literally, it is the Emerald City. Yesterday with those like balloon clouds. It's stunning. It's a really beautiful place.
So you mentioned a little bit about COVID and I can't imagine what Seattle was like because it relies on a lot of people visiting and travel. But right now we're seeing in Seattle and across the board, this restaurant renaissance. Do you know why? Do you have any ideas on why food is becoming so important for travel these days?
I think because of the people that have moved here for a lot of these tech companies and other companies, and for weather and other reasons, Seattle's a relatively benign place to live from a disaster standpoint. There's just a lot more people moving through here and a lot more creativity. And with those people supporting the infrastructure of places like the Food Hub and all these other farmers, they're able to grow more and do cooler things and make it work on a larger web sort of system for everybody, which I really like.
And I love that you keep talking about collaboration and working with folks and then also figuring out operational processes that work for you. You can't just go to that farmer's market, but you can still find those experts. Okay, a couple easy questions. Where have you traveled to last? And I know you've got a 5-month-old, so you perhaps haven't gone far.
I haven't gone too far with her. Sun Valley was the last place we traveled to.
Okay. And then this is my
exotic
follow-up question. But you know what I say? Everyone deserves to travel. And you can take a trip that will put you in a whole different place, but you can still sleep in your bed. So it's all about how your mindset is with
travel. We just got her passport photo last week. So, and I just got the email yesterday that they're doing. So,
okay. So once she gets the passport, where are you guys
going to
go?
I think we are going to Italy this fall.
Great.
For a friend's birthday.
That's so fun.
Come right along with us.
And yeah, my father used to say one child, you can just throw them on your back. It's two when the house explodes. But okay, where in Italy and what do you plan on eating?
We are going to go to Veneto. I think we have friends that have a place in the countryside up there, and pasta always.
All right, last question. When you check in, I'm asking this of everybody, when you check into your destination, whether or not it's Italy or Sun Valley or anywhere else you travel, what is the very first thing you do?
Lay on the bed and water pressure.
Okay. Yeah,
that's two.
So the two most important things for you. Yeah. That makes sense.
Sleep is, I think I'm Princess and the Pea when it comes to sleeping. Or how much wine do I have to drink to sleep well tonight?
Julian, thank you so much for coming and speaking to Powering Travel. I really appreciate
it. It's been
a
joy.
Made me laugh so much. Best of luck with
everything. Come visit us at Harry's.
Oh,
come
again.
Jump on the bed.
I'm coming back.
Yeah. My pleasure. Thank you.
If you want to know more about food and travel trends that are happening currently, go to the link in the description and follow along with us as we talk to more guests and learn more about the business of travel throughout this season. Again, a huge thanks to Chef Julian Haygood for sharing such wonderful insight with us. And thank you for listening to the Powering Travel podcast, brought to you by Expedia Group. I'm your host, Elizabeth Goodridge, and I can't wait to see where you go to next.